Welcome to Life Quest Liberty, live in-depth conversations with today's top writers, editors, and spiritual leaders concerning religious freedom around the world. On today's broadcast, we'll examine local and international factors that may be impacting your right to worship and obey God as your conscience dictates. I'm your Life Quest Liberty host, Charles Mills. They say that hard times bring out both the best and the worst in people. We're certainly seeing that writ large during the COVID-19 pandemic. Could we also say that hard times bring out the best and worst in nations? And how about our religious freedoms? How are they holding up under the strain of social distancing and state-ordered stay-at-home confinement? Lincoln Steed, editor of Liberty Magazine, is with us today via a non-contaminating phone line to share some insights into this subject. Lincoln, the time is yours.
Yeah, great to be on the program again.
Yes.
This is unusual. I usually do this from my office, but here I'm doing it from my bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have my mask on, but I'm certainly in stay-at-home, keep-to-yourself social distancing mode.
Good for you.
What I want to share today is an editorial I just wrote. With our listeners' indulgence, let me read this editorial.
Yes.
I've called it Contagion, and this is what I wrote just a few days ago. Back in early March, I was still traveling far afield promoting religious liberty. One of my last trips before social distancing had me largely confined to home and walks in my neighborhood was to San Francisco, California. Already there was a sense of rising social panic. The airport was a little quieter than usual. Many wore masks to hide their tight expressions. Others, like plovers nesting in the grass, tried to hide in quieter corners of the concourse waiting areas. All paid good attention to the television monitors and the escalating tales of contagion. At the motel, the scream in my room had the same cast. To escape it and the sense of siege, I took off on foot, crossing the moat of the hospitality district, and after underpassing the freeway, arrived in the almost medieval back streets of the city. All seemed normal enough, although with the new awareness of threat, I could see the hazard of jostling in the street or waiting in line in crowded stores for food likely topped with descending vapors. So I decided to seek a quieter venue, and a used bookstore seemed to fit that criteria. It was quieter, confirming my view that panic for most does not necessarily lead to introspection. I scanned the shelves looking for interest and bargains and quickly found both. It was a fat paperback of 750 pages and a price less than a dollar, indicating a lack of reader interest. The title jumped out at me, The Coming Plague, Newly Emerging Diseases in a World Out of Balance. I have been reading it ever since. The 1984 tome, the basis for a TBS documentary, is incredibly close to a secular book of Revelation in its specificity in predicting what we're living through. It documents the efforts of epidemiologists and an array of scientists to combat the veritable assembly line of possible pandemics unleashed by changing world demographics and the effects of climate change. That was some weeks ago. Now the United States has more COVID-19 cases than China, where the virus first appeared, and New York is caught up in a frightening exponential spiral of infection and death. For much of the population, normal life has ceased. Empty grocery shelves reflect panic buying. Empty streets are the Dow Jones proxy for an economy in rewind. Information on the crisis is everywhere, and yet often contradictory and incomplete. One online doctor, strain on his face as he incongruously touches his face repeatedly, says the most successful outcome will be a mere 100,000 dead. The worst case scenario, many, many times that. No wonder some news commentators reaching into the purple verbiage of the Hindenburg tragedy of a century ago keep using the word apocalyptic. That term, of course, means resembling the end of the world, momentous or catastrophic. But at root, it means an evocation of the biblical apocalypse or Book of Revelation, which does prophesy in some detail the final events for this world. People are beginning to wonder at it all. I was in my backyard a few days ago trimming a dead tree, and the neighbor's wife called across the fence to comment on the contagion. It almost seems like one of the plagues of Revelation at the end of the world, she said, maybe testing what my reaction might be. Certainly the type of thing we might expect at the end of time, I said carefully, but it does not directly answer to the specific plagues described in that Bible book. The ancient Etruscans had an interesting view of their history. They divided it into 90-year blocks, roughly equaling four generations and about as long as any human could live. The Romans picked up on the idea but lengthened it to 100 years and then 110 years, calling it a saeculum, the period when living memory failed and human reactions tended to reset. I think it interesting that it is almost 100 years since a flu pandemic killed 675,000 Americans and tens of millions worldwide. We have been here before. Of course, coming on the heels of the generational killing of World War I, the flu epidemic blurred into the general horror of the times and the soon-to-come Great Depression, lest we forget. Benjamin Franklin, he of the Poor Richard's Almanac and many pithy statements, wrote in words variously reported and generally repeated as, "They who are willing to give up liberty for security deserve neither liberty nor security." It is a lesson we started to forget after 9/11 and which should be kept in mind as we adopt draconian and uniformly accepted measures to protect ourselves from the pestilence at noonday and the destruction at midnight. We have long since escaped the pestilences that wiped out native peoples in the New World and the Antipodes, and the depredations of the plague now reside quiescently in history book footnote and weapons lab vial storage. But we would do well to ponder what accompanied the Black Death as it scythed down as much as a quarter or even a third of Europe's population. Economic activity all but ceased, and farms themselves ceased to function, leading to starvation on a level approaching the plague itself. Cannibalism, a repressed memory now only hinted at in fairy tales, was an ugly fact of a desperate time, which had been preceded by decades of crop failure and weather change, suggesting that God had forgotten them. Lawlessness and war followed in the train of social meltdown. I could not help but note that in the midst of the COVID-19 troubles in the U.S., there was news of another North Korean missile launch. So much of our post-World War II peace is because the world's interconnectedness has bound nations to a realization that they will lose more by war than they could ever gain. The collapse of the world economic order might just remove that inhibition. The Christian misreading of Scripture regarding the Jews had long since become a justification for civil suppression in medieval Europe. And then, with the panic of the plague, it spilled over into gross acts of violence. In Strasbourg, on Valentine's Day, 1349, 2,000 Jews were burned alive. Flagellants and religious hysterics abounded. For many, it seemed the end of the world. Even today, religious freedom is a generally supported but often elusive thing. It is not easily judged by a society at large, and it is worth remembering that efforts to restrict it nearly always have broad support and pass as a compelling need. We had best pray that human nature does not react against itself as it did back then. And yes, the scientifically led efforts to limit our present pandemic are well thought out. And yes, the government is acting with sometimes admirable respect for human life. Whether our extreme measures will work well and whether they will bring other troubles in their train remains to be seen. The medieval contagion brought by the Black Death extended far beyond the dying time. It likely will be the same today. That's the some of what I put in my editorial.
Wow. Well, Lincoln, let me ask you this question here. The picture that you paint is quite real, and it is very scary. where should we as Christians turn at this time? Because it seems that in the past, God went away, as well as people's health and lives.
Yes, it does seem that. And then for Christians and Seventh-day Adventists, I think, are the most illustrative group that relate to the end times. And Christians really need to understand in these clearly prophetic end times, even if it's beyond our lifetime, these are the final days. We have to remember that it will appear that God's gone. This is the time that Jesus himself said, unless those days be shortened, no flesh will survive. A time of great test. Even though, as I tried to show from history, we've sort of been here before.
Yes, yes.
But with the exploding population we have today and the stresses of modern life, things that in the past were numbly shocking to people. Now we know every little detail and it's bombarded at us and the effect is even more catastrophic. Mm-hmm. There have been die-offs in the past. This is not even likely to be on the same scale, but yet its effect is likely to be as great as the worst die-offs. Mm-hmm. And those effects are not just deaths and health crises. They're social dislocations, and the reason I wrote the editorial, they're religious enthusiasms and fanaticisms that will come up, and governments taking advantage of the moment, maybe not pre-planned, but taking full advantage of the diminished freedoms to advance their own secular and religious agendas.
You know, as I think about this, and it can be very frightening to sit think about it too long, I've come to a conclusion, and I think you touched on this on a previous program, that this is the time where we don't think collectively, we think individually. We look for God not in our church, not in our nation, not in our leaders, but in our hearts. Am I on the right track saying that?
Well, I think that should be this time.
Yes, yes.
It's always a good way to look at things, because none of us, neither in the Old Testament times, nor the New, nor in these end times, can presume that we're going to be saved just because we've signed up on the membership books of a certain religious group or a certain religious ideology. Always we're saved by our personal relation and response to God. The church has evaporated amazingly quickly, at least in a practical sense, other than a few online contacts. And I think it's throwing people back on their personal spiritual resources. And so good things can come from that. It's amazing to me how things that not just Seventh-day Adventists and with their millenarian views, but many Christians have thought that they would hang tough and resist secularism, persecution, you know, different threats against their faith, how easily all of those models have just collapsed with the shared need to do whatever it takes to stop this contagion. And my double meaning in the heading was the contagion is way beyond a health one. We're basically rolling back all sorts of social and legal protections for many things, but most particularly religious freedom.
If you'd like more information about LifeQuest Liberty, call 443-391-7258 or email us through our website at libertymagazine.org. Join us again next week at this same time as we examine more of the threats and challenges facing your religious freedom. May God keep the flames of liberty burning in your heart today.